Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Officials and eyewitnesses say at least 40 people were killed in a plane crash in Juba's Hyderabad residential area. We're experiencing some difficulties here, but we will still bring the stories to you. And doctors in Darfur say more people have died from hemorrhagic fever in western Darfur. We'll have these stories and more coming up shortly. At least 41 bodies have been recovered from side of a plane crash near South Sudan's capital, Juba. Volunteers at the scene of the crash say there could be more bodies trapped in the wreckage of the plane, which was headed to Fallujah oil fields in Upper Nile State. Civil aviation officials say only three people, including a child, survived. Philip Tonaleu visited the site of the crash and has this report for VOA from Juba.
The Russian-made Antonov V-12 plane took off at 9 a.m. local time. Within a minute, the plane ran into some kind of trouble and began descending, according to eyewitnesses. It hit two trees before crashing into the Hyderabad residential area, southeast of Juba. The debris is scattered over an area about the size of a football field. Wreckage from the plane landed less than 10 meters from Ibrahim Mohammed's house. Mohammed was farming when he saw the plane crash.
I stay here with four of my children. My children were just seated in the house, and I was out in my farm when the plane started descending, then immediately landed near my door, and one of the tires carried on the plane rolled to the compound here. The tire just came and ran into the house, but thank God it has not injured anyone.
Mohammed says he's lucky the plane wreckage did not hit his house.
The sound was so loud because it hit a tree behind there, and I heard some sound. It hit hard, and the sound was so loud when I was in the farm, and I decided to run home. Thank God, when I arrived, I got my children who had also run away, and they were not hurt.
Kenyi Gala, Assistant Operations Manager of Combined Air Service, a flight company which does business with the plane's owner, says it was carrying both goods and passengers to Fallujah. He believes the plane crashed because it was overloaded.
You know, we have problems some of time. Our security people can put people on their own mind without manifest. The cause is just overloading.
Stephen Warikozi, Chief Executive Officer of South Sudan's Civil Aviation Authority, says the cargo plane belongs to a company called Allied Air Service. Warikozi says the pilot communicated with the air traffic control tower just before takeoff.
Captain reported to the tower that the person on board is 12 and fuel is enough for 5 hours. And the crew of the aircraft is mixed, 5 Armenians and 1 Russian. And tonnage of the aircraft is 15.5.
Officials say there were 20 passengers and 6 crew members on board. Volunteers and Red Cross personnel claim to have recovered 42 bodies by 11 o'clock, including several women and children. The passengers were traveling to Fallujah oil fields in Upper Nile State. Taban Sabir led the South Sudan Red Cross team at the crash site. Sabir says his team arrived 2 hours after the crash due to logistical challenges.
With the rains, it is a little bit difficult, so we are trying to do our best to see that we ensure that whether there are any survivors, if not, and then see that we support our Minister of Health to try to rescue or to search and then recover the bodies.
Officials say one child, about 6 months old, survived, as well as 2 men, one of them in critical condition. When asked to explain why only 20 passengers and 6 crew members were reported to be on board and more than 40 bodies have been recovered from the crash site, aviation chief Warikozi had this to say.
I don't know, maybe the people are also on the ground when the aircraft crash. Maybe the other people are there, we don't know.
Warikozi's statement could not be supported by witnesses and residents of Hyderabad neighborhood who say the plane crashed in an empty place near River Nile. Warkozi insists his numbers are correct, as far as he knows.
I'm giving you the official report. This depends on investigation, and we are still now in the stage of recovery.
Warkozi says investigators will determine why a cargo plane was used to carry several passengers and why the pilot gave the air traffic control tower a lower number than the actual numbers on board. He says the flight buoys and flight data recorders, known as black boxes, will be used to help solve many unresolved questions in the investigation. For BOA News, I am Philip Onaleu in Juba.
Waki Simon Wood contributed to that report. We apologize. We have been experiencing a technical problem here, but I'm assured that all is well. World Health Organization says more than 100 people have died from viral hemorrhagic fever in Darfur. Sudanese officials say West Darfur is the most affected state, with at least 60% of fatalities. SIN Bureau reports WHO is working with the Sudanese health officials to try to contain the outbreak and prevent new infections.
The WHO says mosquitoes are to blame for the viral hemorrhagic fever, or VHF, that has taken 109 lives in Darfur and has infected at least 224 people. Officials are testing patient samples to get a better understanding of the cause of the outbreak. Dr. Naima Al-Ghafir, the Sudan country representative for WHO, says the cause of death in cases she has seen is dengue fever and malaria, both illnesses that are carried by mosquitoes.
So immediately the response was to start spraying indoor and outdoor, because dengue is due to mosquitoes during the day and malaria usually in the late evening. So it was an integrated approach, how to immediately spray the houses and also around environments to keep cleaner.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says rapid response teams were also sent to the affected areas to educate the population about seeking medical treatment as soon as they experience fevers, headaches, or joint pain, all symptoms of VHF. Another doctor with the international community, not authorized to speak to reporters, says in years past, communities in Darfur were provided with mosquito nets, but that didn't happen this year. He says it could be one reason why the region has seen a spike in the viral hemorrhagic fever. Dr. Al-Ghafir says their measures are working. She says they have seen only 24 new cases and 5 deaths since October 29th. She says one reason they are seeing a decline is the containment measures that have been enacted.
The other is that case detection, people detected for the symptoms are higher. Third, more importantly, populations are actually, families are taking more care, and the minute they find the symptoms, they go and seek care.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says the fatalities could be less than 1% if people follow the response plan. She urges people to use mosquito nets, to cover standing water, and to go to the doctor if there is any suspicion of the disease. She says these simple steps could save many lives, not just in Darfur, but in the surrounding areas.
Viruses and bacteria, diseases outspread, does not know the border, does not know the politics, does not know the geography.
Dr. Al-Ghafir says WHO sent a special team during the early stages of the outbreak to investigate in case the infections were caused by Ebola, which began in Guinea and spread to other West African countries last year. She says they have since ruled out Ebola because there is no evidence of human-to-human infections. And more importantly, there are no cases among health workers, one of the critical characteristics in the Ebola outbreak. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Delegates from South Sudan's warring parties have agreed on the number of forces to be deployed in Juba at a meeting in Addis Ababa yesterday. Rebels loyal to Riek Machar say they will send their delegation to Juba in 2 weeks. Iskander Frio reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
About 4,800 forces, including presidential guards and national security agents, will be deployed in Juba under the new agreement. Most of them, more than 3,400, will be from the government. The SPLM in opposition will contribute 1,400 forces. The two sides had already agreed to deploy a joint integrated police force for the security of Juba, 1,500 each from the government and SPLM-IO, for a total of 3,000. The two sides have been talking about implementation of the permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangements since September 2015. Up until now, they had disagreed over the number of troops to be deployed in the capital and the makeup of those forces. Now that there is an agreement on the numbers, the pre-transitional government period can begin, a prelude to the transitional government period, according to a document released by IGAD yesterday. If the official signing day was August 26, when President Kiir signed the peace deal, the pre-transitional period shall end on November 23rd, leaving only 27 days to establish the transitional government of national unity and commencement of the transitional period. Chief negotiator for the SPLM-IO, Taban Dengai, says his side is ready to move forward.
We believe today, the 3rd of this month, mark a historical day to the people of the Republic of South Sudan. This is a very important step toward the full implementation of the peace we have signed.
Acting government chief negotiator Michael Makwilwe says he is optimistic the peace deal will be implemented in accordance with this new agreement.
I hope this will be the last meeting here in Addis, because from now onwards we are transferring the implementation of the agreement into South Sudan. We are transferring it into South Sudan, and with this we thank the IGAD for the job well done.
Conflict in South Sudan broke out during a political power struggle within the ruling SPLM party in Juba in late 2013, which quickly spread across the country. If all goes as planned, it will mark the first time in 2 years that SPLM-IO leaders will head back to the capital of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Skander Freo in Addis Ababa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear what South Sudanese are saying about what they want on justice and accountability. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
have you ever been stereotyped?
The stereotypic thing is always there around our society, given the kind of people you associate with. Others will feel, look at you and despise you because of the level you are in. But the most important thing is that I always prove them wrong, because my life keeps changing into the better every day.
Yes, it happened when we were in a refugee camp in Uganda. People have been calling us, we are refugees. So that is mostly the way which has been stereotyped me most.
Not at all. As an individual, never been stereotyped. But people normally say South Sudanese, they are people who are arrogant and something like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Development Programme, the South Sudan Law Society, and a group called the Rule of Law Project released a report last week on public perceptions of truth, justice, reconciliation, and healing following a 6-month survey in South Sudan's Central Equatoria, Eastern Equatoria, Western Equatoria, Upper Nile, and Jonglei and Lek states. VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa has this report.
The survey was conducted between October last year and April of this year with funding from the government of the Netherlands. Research Director of South Sudan Law Society David Deng says the survey was conducted to understand what the South Sudanese people wanted on justice, reconciliation and healing after the conflict.
The difficulty is that this sort of thing hasn't been done in the past in South Sudan, and it's tremendously difficult to think about how to proceed. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of designing the appropriate mechanism and securing real ownership by the people.
Among other things, Deng says 93% of the respondents say those responsible for crimes should be prosecuted. Deng says if the parties agree to move ahead with the implementation of the peace agreement, the South Sudan Law Society will work with the government and the people to get their views on grassroots issues.
And to get their sense of how they would want to proceed with truth, justice, reconciliation and healing. And I think this is really the most critical aspect of the peace agreement is...
Deng says unless the intercommunal conflict is resolved in the country, it will be difficult for the government to implement the peace deal.
Our idea was to try to understand these issues both in relation to the national crisis that erupted in December 2013, but also for different sorts of crises. For example, in Lake State, there's been a lot of intercommunal fighting of late, which is only indirectly related to the national crisis.
Deng says he hopes the peace agreement will hold. He says the perception of people of South Sudan demonstrates they are tired of fighting and in desperate need of peace and justice. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
The UN's Children Fund sees no sign that migrant flows into Europe are slowing down. UNICEF says the number of refugees making the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea is increasing despite the worsening weather conditions. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UNICEF Refugee and Migrant Crisis Chief in Europe, Marie-Pierre Poirier, has just returned from a week-long mission tracking the migrant flow along the so-called Balkan route. She followed the migrants as they moved from the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia at the border with Greece to Serbia and Croatia. She describes the journey as utterly exhausting and fearful, especially for the children. She says people along the route told her they were risking their lives in choppy seas to come to Europe because the prices had gone down.
It looked like smugglers, because of rough weather and possible more difficulties, are giving a discount to anybody, so to keep the numbers up.
Prices reportedly have gone down from a high of $5,000 to a little over $1,000 for a family. As a consequence of these bargain rates, the migrant flows into Europe appear to be unstoppable, at least for now. Macedonian authorities say the number of people they have registered in October is double that of September. Poirier adds there also has been an increase in the proportion of women and children among the population on the move.
We were talking of one-third. The data for October, as registered by the authorities in Gevgelia, is 44%. In September, it was 36%. We are also tracking the number of children. In June, if we go back, 1 of 10 of the people registered was a child. The data for October is 1 in 3.
Poirier calls this a crisis for children. She notes 190,000 children, that is 700 children every day, have sought asylum in Europe so far this year. She says there are signs possible new routes to Europe are emerging. She says an increasing number of people in Turkey are not going across the water. Instead, they are going through Istanbul on the land road to Bulgaria. But she warns migrants are unlikely to receive a warm welcome there. She says migrants reportedly are being put in detention and the Bulgarian police are taking a harsh position. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
East African artists are becoming household names as the continent's art scene is growing rapidly. The Circle Gallery in Nairobi hosted East Africa's first and only commercial art auction last night, following the lead of London-based Born Hams and Nigeria-based Art House Contemporary Auctions, which stage regular art auctions to build emerging African art market. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
Here in Nairobi, roughly 300 artists, art lovers, and collectors came to mingle Tuesday evening for the third annual Circle Art Agency's Modern and Contemporary Art Auction, which bills itself as the first and only such commercial auction in East Africa. The agency's director, Danda Yerolimek, says artwork from Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, and even Namibia was represented at Tuesday's auction.
Well, each country is incredibly different, but I think the commonality is really that it's less known than other regions in Africa, and we're trying to raise that awareness and to expose artists from this region and to bring in international and local buyers to make sure that they're aware of, you know, the great art that's here.
51 paintings and sculptures were on offer, ranging from contemporary portrayals of African wildlife to traditional village scenes to works of social commentary, like the one entitled No African Pope, or another providing a scathing depiction of a Nairobi doctor's strike. Dual American-Kenyan citizen Linda Benvenuto has lived in Nairobi since 1975. An art lover, Benvenuto says she remembers when artists concentrated on non-controversial pieces, like traditional African wildlife motifs.
Now you get more edge, you get more perspective, you feel it a lot more. You feel the sort of grit of Nairobi and sort of growing Nairobi.
According to Urolamek, artists are no longer beholden to galleries. They are independent and seek their own opportunities.
Everyone has a smartphone, everyone has access to information, people are traveling, people are trying to take international opportunities. You know, the whole atmosphere has changed.
Benvenuto remembers the first Circle auction in 2013.
It was very exciting. It was a great fever, and you can see that people are really, you know, looking towards Nairobi as an art scene now.
A fever that appears to have continued. This year, the auction grossed more than $191,000 in sales, continuing a steady increase since the first auction in 2013. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
We now take you to Western Bahr el Ghazal, where a non-governmental organization is using drama to encourage girls to enroll and stay in schools. A team from Free Voice is visiting schools in Western Bahr el Ghazal state to stage drama shows intended to enlighten girls on the importance of education. Michael Atit reports for VOA from WOW.
In this drama, performed yesterday by WOW A Girls Primary School in WOW, the players took on the controversial issues of early marriages, something that forces girls to drop out from the school. 14-year-old Elizabeth Hilario, a primary 8 pupil, says she finds the drama interesting and informative.
I don't want to be like my fellow girls that their parents force them to get married in their early age because I think I have a future. I want to study medicine and help our community during childbirth. If I am a doctor, I will do a lot for them.
Joyce Maker is a scriptwriter for the Sawa Shabab radio drama, which is produced by Free Voice in conjunction with the United States Institute for Peace. Maker says she believes drama is a useful tool to address many issues among the South Sudanese communities, including girl child education.
When something is dramatized in front of you and you see it, you'll be able to relate to what is going on. It gives you like a flashback, whether it's you or whether it's something that happened to a friend of yours or whether it's something that happened to your enemy. It's something that you can relate to, other than putting it down in papers or in books.
Maker says Free Voice plans to establish a permanent office in WOW to continue creating an awareness of importance of educating girls and other issues affecting South Sudanese. Primary 8 student, 13-year-old Yubila Khamis, says many girls have dreams of attaining an education, but their parents don't always help them to realize those dreams. She says she would like to become a lawyer to defend the rights of members of her community.
Through this kind of drama, I believe it will give a lesson to some parents to realize and allow their girls to complete their studies. We want them to know also that if girls are educated, they can bring peace in the community. I want to become an advocate for those who face injustice in our community.
Mariana Biri is one of the many parents who attended yesterday's show. She advised girls to wait until they finish their studies before they marry. She says, "Man who does not encourage his girlfriend to complete high studies is not a good man."
If a boy loves you, he does not allow you to leave the school. He encourages you to study and complete your schoolwork, and later on you can continue your life. So you have to beware of such boys. Whoever loves you should wish you good.
Girls attending WOW A Girls Primary School also performed poems, songs, and dances, encouraging girls to stay in school. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Witnesses and officials say at least 41 bodies have been recovered from the site of a plane crash outside of Juba. The plane, which was headed to the Palouche oil fields in Upper Nile State, crashed shortly after takeoff in the High Gabat residential area about a kilometer from Juba International Airport this morning. Civil aviation officials say only three people, including a child, survived. Within a minute of takeoff, the Russian-made Antonov B-12 experienced some sort of trouble and began descending rapidly, according to witnesses. The debris is scattered over an area about the size of a football field. The World Health Organization, or WHO, says more than 100 people have died from viral hemorrhagic fever in Darfur. Sudanese health officials say West Darfur is the most affected state, with more than half of the fatalities. WHO and Sudan Ministry of Health officials are trying to contain the outbreak. The WHO says mosquitoes have caused the viral fever, which has claimed at least 109 lives in Darfur and has infected more than 220 people overall. And finally, South Sudan government and armed opposition representatives have agreed on the number of forces to be deployed in Juba at a meeting in Addis Ababa yesterday. SPLM-IO officials say they will send their delegation to Juba in 2 weeks. About 4,800 forces, including presidential guards, will be deployed in Juba under the new deal. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol, and that's our show for this Wednesday. Our thoughts and prayers are with the families of the people whose loved ones perished in the Juba plane crash. We now leave you with the song, You Are Not Alone, by Michael Jackson.
Another day has gone, I'm still all alone. How could this be? You're not here with me. You never said goodbye. Someone tell me why. Did you have to go? Every day is
joining us tonight. Remember to tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.